Now, here's Sat and Alex.
Welcome to Canuck Central at Noon. It is the biggest show we've had. And literally, we have four people in the studio. We've never started a show with four people in the studio. May as well be eight, because Henrik and Daniel Sedin join us in the studio with Alex Ald and myself and Aldi. How excited are you to have your buddies in here?
Yeah. Just another day. No, it's great to have you guys. And I know we've been juggling the scheduling, and this is actually a very fitting day with a lot of news in Canucks land. And we were just telling the two of you, we started the day with Matt Sundin on the morning show, Elias Pettersson signing a contract, Jim Benning on, and to top it off, we've got you guys. So thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
So how's the offseason been? I mean, you still approach it like the offseason, right? Because you haven't gotten used to being off for a full year. So does it feel like the offseason right now?
It does, for sure. It's it still feels like we should be back in September, but it's we're still working out. We're doing the same things that we would have done any other year that we missed the playoffs. So, but we'll see how it feels in September.
Now, Dan Murphy tweeted a picture, sent it out last week. You guys golfing with Murph and Shorty. Said something about you guys doing a trail run the day before, like 20 or 30K or something like that. So what's that all about?
Yeah, that's one thing we've been really into lately. Just going for long runs, and hopefully we can get into some races too in the future. But that race took the best out of me. I ran straight into a wall. And
well, I'm not surprised, because I remember I had my my dog down at the beach one day, and I'm driving up the hill, and there you are just walking. And you were gassed, and you were like, can you give me a ride home, Daniel? Like, did Daniel ask me for a ride home? I'm like, sure, okay, I'll take you home. And me, I think he was talking to Hank at the time, and I don't know. So hopefully you're getting better at the runs, because you were pretty gassed that day, too.
That hill from Jericho Beach up to where I live is pretty steep, though, so that's understandable.
All right.
So what are you doing tomorrow? Are you going to do some more training tomorrow? Any plans or going for runs?
Yeah, no, we do. We do something every second day, so it's tomorrow is going to be another long run for us. So it's we have a few races lined up over the summer, all the way through September, I think. So there's a bike race in there as well, mountain biking. So it's that's something I think it's good for us to have something to look forward to and to train for. So
will we see you guys compete in an Ironman competition one day?
No, I'm too bad a swimmer. So that will never happen. But like Henrik said, biking and running are the two main things that we really enjoy doing.
Sat, the thing you might not know, hockey players in swimming, so bottom heavy.
Right.
Those booties aren't buoyant. they're like dead weight. Just
they sink.
But so you guys mentioned having a couple of races lined up. Back home in Sweden, or are you staying here all summer? What's the plan there?
Yeah, we'll head back end of June. We're fortunate to be able to go to Vegas for the award show, and then after that we'll head home. Come back end of August, early September for the kids' school, so... Yeah, we're always excited to go back and see family and friends.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Henrik, is that when you think it's going to really sink in? Like when you come back next year and you're not coming back to play hockey?
Yeah, for sure. That's, like I said earlier, that's especially when training camp starts, I think that's going to be the time where you're... I mean, we're down at the rink. We see the guys. I'm sure we're going to see them when we get back as well at Rogers. But when they leave for their training camp, I think it's... that's when we're going to realize what's happened.
Has there been any doubt yet? Like, has anything crept in? Like, when you kind of wake up one day and say, maybe we want to keep playing, or not yet? Or do you have moments at all when you think about it?
No, not a single time, for me at least. It's it felt really good. I mean, it's tough to watch playoffs now, for sure. I mean, that's the case every year when you miss it. So, but other than that, it's felt good.
Nobody's tried to talk you out of it? Like, you haven't had a phone call from somebody be like, hey guys, listen, just give it a few more months, come back. Nobody's been trying to talk you out of it yet?
Wife is starting to mention.
Yes, get out.
You're around too much.
Exactly. we can easily get by that.
So what's the one thing that you couldn't do while you were playing? Because, you know, obviously you can't go skydiving, for instance, or you can't go skiing. What's the one thing you look forward to doing, say, in the wintertime?
Yeah, I think skiing is one thing. Cross country and downhill, just to be able to drop the kids off at school and then head up to the hills. And that's the one thing that comes to mind. We did it after the season a few times, and it was amazing to be able to go up to Whistler and ski for a day.
Okay, what's wrong with you guys? Long distance trail runs and cross country skiing. We just got to get out there. We got to do this. You know what's funny is 1995, I believe, the World Nordic Ski Championships were in my hometown of Thunder Bay.
Thunder Bay, yes.
And when I, this is the funny thing, when I first met these two, one of the first things they said, oh, you're from Thunder Bay. Oh, yeah, the Nordics were there. And I'm like, no one in Thunder Bay really cared, but everyone in Sweden cares. I mean, right. Nordic sports there, it's they're pretty into cross country and ski jumping too. That be big there? Or is it all just cross country?
They had the best ski jumper in the world there for a few years, but that was back in the early 90s. Maybe. Yeah. After that, we've had no one that really has been good at it. But cross country is enormous.
What about the summer with the World Cup coming up? Because I know, Henrik, you played a lot of soccer, and you played a lot too, Daniel. But I remember reading about you coming up that you did you play for the under like 17 national team, or you were sort of in the conversation at one point?
Yeah, we both were at the final stages of the last training camps, and I got picked. But I think that was more. I mean, he is as good as me, or he was the same as me. But I played on a position that suited me better than he did. So I got picked for. I think it was like 25 players left or 30 players left for the under 16 or 17 national team. And but that was the summer when we decided to go with hockey.
And how close were you, though, Daniel, to maybe choosing soccer instead of hockey? Like, was it a decision to be made?
I don't know. I think it was hockey was the obvious choice. Soccer, we probably had to move to a different city at the when we were 16, and we wanted to stay in our hometown. So if we were going to do that, I think hockey was the only choice.
I also should mention that Daniel now has a budding soccer coaching career. So
yes.
We kind of teased this yesterday. Our daughters are friends. We're signed up to play on the same soccer team. And then we get this email about a week from the start of the season that the team's going to have to fold if no one volunteers. So I send him a text message and I'm like, hey, like, can you coach? And he's like, I don't know anything about coaching. I'm like, I'm pretty sure you're okay, a good enough athlete to do it. I think you can manage. But then I laid the guilt trip on heavy and I said, hey, isn't this why you retired? So you could spend more time with your family? Immediate response, that's what my wife just said. Yeah, so, and you did it. How's that going?
It's going pretty good. I have to say, the seven-year-old girls, it's not easy.
They're coachable, though? They listen?
Coachable. Yeah, they listen.
Probably more unexpected, I was able to convince my wife to be the assistant coach because I couldn't do. I had conflicts. I don't know anything about soccer.
You say Daniel Sedin's coaching, it's pretty hard to say no. I can't go and be an assistant. If Daniel can find time to do it, why can't you?
True. And because my wife's not running 30-40k on the trails every other day. Sorry,
Alex is there most of the time watching those. So I don't know why he didn't sign
judging,
up to be
watching.
Coach.
I'm paid to be an analyst now, so I'm analyzing you and always judging what's going on. I think you should work on a couple of things. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, my daughter is not too like. I always ask her, like, was I a good coach today? And she's like, no.
Kids are the most honest ever, right? Like, you know you mess up because your kid's like, yeah, no, that was bad.
Yeah.
Once you're a teenager, like, yeah, no, it was good. You tried hard, Dad. But I think when they're 7 years old, you suck.
Deep inside, I think she's happy.
I hope my teenagers tell me I'm good at something and tried hard. I don't think that's going to happen, Seth.
Well, I
think they're going to be rude.
I mean, that's because you're mean sometimes.
That's true.
I think that could be the biggest reason.
Good point.
So for the World Cup, I mean, how excited are you for Team Sweden making it? I mean, it was one of those years where it was unexpected for them to get to this point, beating Italy in that game. And listen, you guys know I grew up in Sweden too, so I was super excited about it. But how excited are you for the World Cup in Sweden?
It's every summer there's a World Cup, and especially with Sweden playing in it, it's a great summer. So we'll spend the first couple of weeks here watching the World Cup, and then the rest of summer back in Sweden. So
I think they start the 18th against South Korea. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a lot of fun. It's 3-4 weeks of just great fun. So.
I remember back in '94 when Sweden made that big run, obviously winning the bronze medal, and it was a magical summer in Sweden. Like, everybody was into it. I mean, you had the great team, of course. You had Kenneth Anderson scoring the goals, Martin Dahlin, a young Henrik Larsson too. So, I mean, the history is really big. I mean, people don't realize in Sweden, it's hockey and soccer. They're essentially the same.
Yeah, no. You grew up in Sweden and you play hockey or soccer. That's those are the two sports. And for us, it was soccer in the summertime and hockey in the winter. So it's a little bit easier to combine sports back in Sweden than it is over here.
That is a challenge for sure in North America right now, having kids play more than one sport. But you mentioned something earlier, Henrik, about how when you were coming up in soccer, you made a team, Daniel didn't. Was that the first time sort of there would have potentially been separation? Or had you played a part before that?
First and only time, I think.
Oh, yeah, so that leads to my next question, whereas leading into the 99 NHL entry draft, were you worried about being picked apart?
Yeah, no, for sure. But I think it started like 96, 97. Daniel played for the Elite League team in Modo, and I didn't. So that, I think that was the first time where we played a part in hockey. He played every game pretty much the first season, and I was scratched. I played with the junior team, and so he that was almost a full year with us not playing together. So that was the first year.
What a nice guy, and he could have brought that up right here.
Yeah, but I kept it quiet. I know he still feels bad about it.
Yeah.
Well, same thing there. Henrik was a centerman, a tougher spot to obviously play for the team, and I was a winger, so I think that was the biggest part.
Well, and I think that's interesting because in Sweden, oftentimes the younger players really have to work before they get up, and especially playing center. That's something Elias Pettersson did. They moved him off center because they felt he was too young. So sometimes it depends on the position you play, and they're really patient or, I guess, very conservative with how they bring centers along. And why is that way in Sweden?
Well, I don't know. I think it's just, centermen are usually the core of the team where you need to be strong down the middle. And we, at the time, our Modo team had four centermen. They all ended up playing in the NHL a couple years after that. So they were really, really deep. So it was tough for a centerman to crack the team. But Daniel did. And, he had a great year the first year. And I had to struggle on the bus traveling with the junior team. So that was tough.
So... 99 NHL draft, same draft as me. I remember it well. When did you guys get an inkling of the trades that were coming down the pipe with Vancouver? Like, was it on the floor of the draft that morning, or do you have any word of it leading up to it?
Well, that was the actual day of the draft. We heard rumors something might happen, but even up until then, we thought for sure we were going to get drafted by different teams.
Yeah, and Daniel, I remember talking to you about this earlier this winter and just saying, like, what would have been, like, can you even think back, like, what might have happened if two different teams would have picked you and you would have been rivals? How crazy that would have been. The last 20 years or so would have been so different.
Yeah, it's tough to imagine what would have happened. I can't even think about it. Like, I'm that's why we're so grateful that we were able to play in the same team, because who knows, it might have been a short career.
And that's interesting you mention it, because I think anybody in any profession, and especially if you succeed, there's always a point in time where you're not sure you're going to make it, where you kind of feel like, I might fail out of this. And it depends on what you do, but everybody has that moment. And you guys have talked about how it was Marcus and it was Trevor who really, in those moments where you guys weren't sure if you guys could make it, helped you guys out. Was it close to almost going the other way? Like, seriously close to be like, you know what, we just want to go back to Sweden and play?
I'm sure there was days when we thought that, but... if you look at the big picture, I think overall we wanted to fight through and battle and not give up. But there was days, coming home from the rink and you had Crawford yelling at you for a few hours, showing you video. Those were tough days. But deep inside, I doubted that we would have given up. You mentioned Marcus and Trevor, but there's a lot of guys on that team, even guys like that you wouldn't expect, but Bertuzzi and Jovanovski and those
Aldi.
Guys, they brought him in just to support us. So there was a lot of guys who stepped up and were great us.
Now, it's funny, I brought this up on the air kind of near the end of the season, and I apologize. I'm going to rip you a little bit here. I apologize to the city for some of your lack of shootout success. And I don't know if you guys remember early on how the two of you, myself and Jarkko Ruutu, we used to do lots of shootouts at the end. Like, did I hurt you guys in that? Did I give you too much confidence? What was the problem?
Yeah, but you never hurt Jarkko. I don't know. He always seemed to score. So,
anyway, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, whatever. I thought I was doing great. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened to you on that. But it was something that was kind of funny, especially at the end of the year when you guys finished with the shootout in the last game.
Oh, I scored my last game.
I know you did.
That's
yeah.
All I'm going to remember. I don't care about the... It's what have you done for me later, right? It's not
right. And you know what, Henrik, your reaction, because you guys had your kids come onto the bench too, you guys surprised, and your reaction when Daniel scored, kind of walk us through, because you guys don't always, express that emotion, and the game didn't mean that much, but that moment, how special was it? Your kids are on the bench, and your brother goes out and scores that goal, the final moment you're on the ice.
Yeah, no, it was fun for sure. I think I just hoped that I wasn't going to go out there. Maybe if they would have missed or something, I don't know. But no, it was good times. For Travis to bring out the kids and our family on the bench, that meant a lot to us for sure.
So, that's the last game. I think what everyone will remember, though, is the game before, the last home game. Mm-hmm. Take us through that time, I guess. The day of that game, but even before that, like the decisions announced, you guys, that week was kind of a dream week in a lot of ways. I don't know, your thoughts, your words, what was it like?
Even making the decision to come out with the announcement was, we didn't really know what to expect. Like we wanted to play those last three games and kind of keep it quiet, but talking to the team and them wanting to do something was special, and the way it ended up was something we'll remember for forever.
So you talk about that decision. I guess, I mean, you talked a bit about the timeline earlier this year, but when did you guys know for sure, 100% certain, this is it, we're done?
I think it's tough to pinpoint a date. I think it's something we talked about all year, and we knew it was our last year of the deal, and we were going to have to make a decision and based on a lot of different things. So I think throughout the year we put a lot of thought into it, and then around Christmas maybe or the weeks after that, I think it became clear to us.
So I know you're probably not going to really answer if there was any dissension in this, but was there ever a time when, for instance, Henrik, you were thinking, yeah, and Daniel's like, I don't know, I still think maybe I want to play, or was it always 100% on board together?
Yeah, I think that's been the good part, because even our families too have always been, it was 100% clear all the time. I think there was never that Henrik wanted to keep playing and I wanted to quit. It was we've always been on the same page, and that's fortunate. I mean, it could have been another way too. But.
And you guys mentioned that you wanted to prove you can produce. Did that make it easier, having a good season, to say, sort of say, this is how we're ending our careers?
Absolutely. It's a lot of people talked about us producing would make us want to come back, but that could have been the case. But it was nice to go out in on a high note where we put up 50 plus points, and so that makes it's a good feeling inside to know that we can still play.
What about that last game in Edmonton? And I know a lot of fans from Vancouver went there, and a lot of Canucks fans in Alberta were there. But you had a lot of Edmonton Oilers fans too, just serenading you every time. Was that sort of, were you surprised by that, or were you expecting it to be like that?
I think after the last home game, it almost felt like, why fly to Edmonton and play yeah, the game there? Right. But when we got there and we got in, the Oilers players and coaches, mm-hmm. Trainers invited us into the locker room and presented us with a gift before the game, and then the crowd was amazing too. I'm happy that that game happened, because that was neat.
In a way, I think it was almost justice, because I think for many years you guys were treated unfairly, both by the media here and in the NHL. I'm not sure people really appreciated the level of talent you guys had and how you produced. And a lot of times people around the league may not know and really accept. But then you saw in that final game, it's like the league appreciated. It's like the league had been awakened to what you guys have done. And you know, and maybe you guys don't care about being appreciated, but do you sort of feel like now that your careers are done that the entire league appreciated what you guys did?
Yeah, no, there was a lot of people coming out and telling us how they felt. So that was nice. And especially with the Oilers fans, where we've had some really good games against them too.
Yeah, the shift.
In their building. So it's... It was like Daniel said. It was very special, and it meant a lot to us.
I think that's what's so cool about the sport. I mean, whether it's the handshake line at the end of a tough playoff series, whether it's you guys keeping bringing the Canucks back onto the ice in Ryan Smith's last game to congratulate him on his career, and then the Oilers bringing you guys into the locker room. I mean, those types of things. I think it's great now because people can really see it through social media. That was out there. You know, I remember doing the broadcast that night, and it was out on social media even before, before you guys had even left the dressing room, probably. And I mean, talk about that bond of players, I guess, like even players on different teams, teammates. I mean, how special is that in hockey?
It is special. And I don't know, like I like you have new players coming into your team each and every year, and it seems like you have that instant friendship, and it lasts for forever too. Like I still remember all of my teammates throughout the years, and you still keep in touch, and it is something special for sure. And like you said, the respect factor too. You go through a tough seven game series in the playoffs, and afterwards you're shaking the hands, and you're good, like you move on, and that is neat.
You know, one thing that I found interesting too about the end, and especially that final game, was it felt special. Like, it felt like a playoff game. You know, we were at both the final two games, and even against Vegas, it was a real good vibe. But then that final game against Arizona, where does that rank in terms of I guess, accomplishment or team accomplishment or moments in your careers? Like, how high does that rank?
It ranks very high for us. I mean, like you said, it felt like a playoff atmosphere, and even though you could feel that no one was really nervous about the game, like mm-hmm. the score didn't really matter for the fans, and so that made it different. But I think it was good for our young guys to see how Rogers Arena can be when it's packed and it has that kind of atmosphere in it. So that was neat for I mean, very special for us, but also for the younger guys. I think a lot of them have never seen that before, so that made it special.
I agree. I mean, I that took me back to years ago, what that building can be mm-hmm. like, and you almost forget that it's even possible because of the last few years of missing the playoffs. And I think, you know, the fact you were able to give those guys that is special. Bigger picture, though, if you were to think about your legacy as Vancouver Canucks, I mean, what's the thing you want to be remembered for the most? Let's start with Daniel.
I think that we were always inclusive. Like, we would always include the young guys. Would always treat them with a lot of respect, the same that we were treated when we came into the league. And I think new guys coming in, they always felt welcome and a big part of the team. So regardless of what we did on the ice, I think off the ice is more important to us, that guys would always feel welcome.
What about you? Anything different, Henrik?
Yeah, yes. I mean, for us, we try to come in every morning and be... appreciate the life we had, and we were fortunate to be able to play in the best league and for a lot of years. And we came in, it didn't matter if Daniel scored 4 goals the night before, we've lost 5-2. We tried to come in every morning, be positive and do the things that you have to do if you're a professional hockey player. And that's what we've done for all the years, and I think that's what made us successful.
You know, and it's one of those things about culture that gets talked about a lot and sort of passing it down. And you guys obviously played with Marcus and Todd Bertuzzi before, and then obviously, you know, the time frame changed. But have you noticed a trend with this organization almost in terms of the characters who have been the leaders? You had Trevor, you had Marcus, you have you guys. There seems to be following a trend of similar personalities and sort of how people conduct themselves. Is that something that you guys have been looking at and learning from the other leaders that were ahead of you guys here in Vancouver?
For sure. I mean, like you said, you mentioned those names, but I think for us, when we came in, we didn't talk to those players a lot, but we watched them. We mm-hmm. watched them each and every day, what they did, if they went into the gym or how hard they worked in practice, how they acted around fans and media. I think that's something we did when we were young, and I hope... young guys now come in and do the same thing. I don't think you need to talk to them a lot, but if they can watch and learn, I think that's equally as important.
Well, I'm not going to ask you to name the next captain. I won't do that to you. But where do you see, what do you think of the leadership going forward? Like, I mean, I know it's kind of an abstract thing to answer, but are there guys who probably can do more and weren't doing it because you guys were there? Or where do you see that?
Yeah, I think for sure when we stepped away. Now, there's going to be other guys that's going to be more vocal or take on that role because we're leaving. I think it's very natural to maybe sit back or don't take charge when you have all the guys around. So that's going to be one way of getting more leadership. There's guys in the room that are big leaders right now and that we've seen in the past couple of years. And a lot of the older guys... Sutter, Alex Edler, Chris Tanev is a leader in his own way. New guys come in with Delzato and Gags as well. So they have leadership, and also in the young group, you have a different kind of leadership maybe with Bo and even like Sven and those guys. So there's a lot of guys in there, and like I said, they're gonna have a chance now to step up when we left.
You know what? We have so much more to get to. You guys need a little bit of a break. You have some more water. You guys have played 60 minutes on the ice before. 60 minutes on radio is a little bit different.
It's a little different.
It's just talking, but it's a little different. We're used to just talking so much, but we'll be back on the other side. We'll ask about Elias Pettersson, what to expect from him moving forward. Matt Sundin was on the morning show today on Sportsnet 650, and he had a good story to tell, and it has to do with you guys. We'll get to that and more right here on Canuck Central at Noon.
Now more of Canuck Central with Satyar Shah and Alex Auld on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
It's a special edition of Canuck Central at Noon with Sat and Alex. We have Henrik and Daniel sitting in studio for a full hour. And guess what? They did not escape during the break. So thanks for staying here and not leaving. I thought they're going to book it for a moment.
Good call here.
Yeah. Henrik's leaking over there. He's sweating out, so I don't know.
It's hot. They're under the spotlight, literally under the spotlight.
It's not a radio game, man. It's not an easy game. It's tough work. A lot of tough work. Got to stay hydrated. So.
Well, and the best thing about Henrik and Daniel, they're asking us about broadcasting. Like, we're sitting here trying to ask you guys about, you know, what's this and that. And they're like, what is it like doing this and that? I'm like, somebody's asking us about things. Usually it doesn't quite work out that way. But I think that's a big reason why this market also like has fallen in love with you guys. And when we sort of talked about you guys going to be on the show yesterday and the day before, I had so many people reach out to me and say, just let them know, just say thank you. From the fans, say thank you, not for just being great players, being great ambassadors, and representing our city in such a positive way. So that was the overwhelming sentiment when we announced you guys are joining us, that fans just want to say thank you, Citizens.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure you guys felt it too, the final couple of games, as you mentioned, you know, the outpouring of support. But, you know, that's the thing, because once you become this special in a market, you become part of the fabric of the city, and that's how you guys view yourselves. I mean, you're Vancouverites, your children were born here, you're not looking at moving away, you're about living in this community, and I think fans understand and appreciate that, and I think that makes the bond, I would imagine, tighter for you guys too with this fan base.
Yeah, for sure. It's not very often where you see foreign players falling in love in a city like we have. I mean, you usually go back to your hometown or your home country, but it's always felt really special for us, this place, and our kids are born here for the most part, and they love it here as well. So it's special.
Well, and there's no Grouse Grind back in Sweden either, right? So that's a big part of your life.
Well, not for
well.
The next 4 weeks either. It's closed down. So
What's interesting though is we were kind of talking about this before we came out in the break room. Sat, you were still working, and how the idea came up of the two of you biking from faraway lands, biking all the way to the Grouse Grind, swimming a little bit, hiking up, and that was your daily routine.
Fighting bears.
And in reality, they said, you know what? Don't tell anyone. Sorry, guys. We only did that once. But that's what I love about you guys. Something gets said and it becomes this like mythical story.
Yeah. Start spreading more.
So is there any other things that we don't know? Like something like that? That's like you guys, Ian McIntyre will ask you in a scrum. And you're like, oh, yeah. And you're like, what an idiot. This only happened one time. And these guys all think it goes on every day.
It would be great if you actually never done the grind. That would be, because I think that's the biggest thing that's out there. They do the grind and I don't know how many minutes.
19 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
19 minutes. Like the record's like something like 28 or something like that. 24?
24.
Yeah, something.
Yeah. I remember a couple years ago I was doing it, huffing and puffing, and all of a sudden I hear this deep Swedish voice coming up behind me. And I look, and it's Henrik and his oldest, Walter. They kind of like talk with me for a little bit. And then Henrik's like, okay, got to go. And they just, bing, they're gone. And I'm like, oh, my God.
It was Walter pacing him. Though.
Yeah. It's insane. I don't know.
What was it about this city that you guys fell in love with? And outside of, you know, just playing hockey here, like, what was it about the city that made you made this feel like home?
Well, I think the how beautiful it is. I think the mountains and the water. I mean, downtown Vancouver is so nice, but mostly the people. I think they're Canadians overall. I think it reminds them of us of Swedes. They're down to earth, and this city too. Everyone's so they like to be out running, and you see the seawall during the weekends. It's always packed with people. The trails in the North Shore is always packed, and it's they really like the outdoors.
The hope is the next great Swedish player is Elias Pettersson. Unfortunately, he didn't end up actually playing with you guys, but he will be here next year. He just signed his 3-year entry-level contract. What has it been like sort of watching his progress?
He looks amazing. I mean, I only seen highlights and little bits and pieces here and there, but he looks like the real deal. But you don't want to put too much pressure on him, because I've seen a lot of really good NHL players come over and play on the on a big rink back in Europe, and they have not looked good. So it's a different game, but he has the tools to succeed. And I don't want to forget the other guy either, the Darling kid. I mean, yeah. he played in the second division back home, but he looks like he's a greedy kind of player, and if he can turn out to be a little bit like his dad, then he's going to be good.
What advice would you have for those two guys, especially Pettersson, because of the hype? I don't know if there's a Canucks prospect coming out of junior or coming out of Europe who has as much hype as he does since you guys.
Fedorov.
Well, that's true. I'll never forget the one day where, like, we're ready to go out. This is in Manitoba. We're ready to go out. And all of a sudden, someone just said to him, like, you know you have your first name and your last name. And the whole room just burst out laughing. It was just one of those stupid hockey player things.
Well, there were so many stories with him. It was the infamous one with him and Kevin Bieksa that Brian Burke always talks about. They got into it. And it was there. And Burke said, now you made the team. Because you did, well, he didn't actually make the team, but he got excited about him actually
Management
being an NHL player.
Was so pumped for Juice when he did that. I don't, anyway.
Well, the story's been out. So, you know, the long story short, you can explain it.
Well, yeah, there was a fight and Juice one punched him. Fetty was outside Earl's in Winnipeg in the cold with no shirt on, waiting for him for like 20 minutes. And it just anyway, the question was, what advice do you have for Pettersson to come over and handle the transition, the spotlight, everything?
I think you gotta be yourself. I think that's the main thing. Don't be anything you aren't. And there's gonna be pressure on him, but I think he's been through a lot back in Sweden too. I mean, playing in the elite league there is not easy either. He plays against men and done extremely well. But I hope they, like Henrik said, don't put too much pressure on him. Let him evolve into the player he can be.
And what sort of mentorship role can you guys provide Elias? Because I know we talked about this before, but you guys don't want to just come in and show up every single day to practice. But how active will you try to be to sort of help those young guys, especially Pettersson and Dahlin, if they're both in Vancouver next season?
Yeah, I know. I mean, like I said, we're going to be around. There's no question about that. But we don't want to spend every day at the rink. But I'm sure we're going to meet them, and if they need help, we'll be there for them. And but again, it's going to be up to them to take the step. And I think also, yes, take it day by day. Mm-hmm. Come in every day and do the things that you asked to do and finish up with a little bit of extra, and then they should be good.
Do either of you want another child? Maybe they could move in with you, and one of them or something like that. Basement suite or coach house, whatever you got. I don't know. Maybe that would be an option.
Oh, I have three, and that's enough right now.
All right.
I mean, and I'm coaching too, so I mean it's a lot of work.
That's a lot of that's true. That's yeah. fair. That's pressure. Yeah. You're not coaching, Henrik. What about you?
Assistant coach.
Oh,
assistant
okay. coach.
I'm soccer. Same thing. 8-year-olds, boys.
Too busy now. You can raise another child. You're too busy. Too much going on. The adjustment from going from the Swedish Hockey League to the NHL, I've imagined it's changed a lot since when you guys came over nearly 20 years ago now. But what would you say is the hardest thing to wrap your head around as a young teenage hockey player from Sweden coming over to Canada?
I think the schedule. Mm-hmm. Intensity, I think 82 games with preseason and all that comes with that. I think a lot of travel. I think that's the main thing. In Sweden, you play 55, right?
Yeah.
A few breaks here and there for a national team. And it's pretty, I wouldn't say easy playing in Sweden, but compared to over here, that's the biggest thing.
We're in conversation with Henrik and Daniel Sedin in studio for a full hour here on Sportsnet 650.
How long did it take you to adjust? Like, how many years until you felt comfortable with the NHL schedule?
The schedule, I mean, not too long, like a couple of years, maybe.
Yeah.
The first year goes by so quickly, like, you know, like you're a rookie, everything is new. But the second year was tough. And then all of a sudden, the third year, there's a lot of pressure on you to become the player that you need to become. Like the pressure there for us to be first liners, and we were far from first liners our third year, but I think for us seventh, eighth year, I think that's when we became really, really comfortable in the players we were and the people as well.
Well, you mentioned, I mean, it took that long before you were really producing at that top level. When in your mind, did you always believe that was capable? When in your mind was it like, yeah, I believe it, but this is actually possible. Was there a point where that kind of happened?
I think we went back to play in Sweden during the lockouts 04, right?
Yeah.
I think when we came back after that, I think it felt a lot better. We had a, I think we just settled down and we realized that we got to work extremely hard to get back to be the players we can be. And we got back the year after. We played with Anson that year, exactly. It took a little bit of a step. He was a big help for us on that line. I mean, he's played with some top line players before, and I think after that we took a little bit of a step each year, and then a few years after that, I think we realized we could be the guys.
So you mentioned Anson Carter. What specifically did he do well that really just meshed with you guys?
I just remember that our first couple of practices together, because it did not feel good. I think our training camp was in Whistler, I think. Yeah. And it was just like, he wasn't the best skater, and we are not lightning fast either. So I remember thinking, like, how is this going to work out? Because they brought him in to play with us. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it's going to be a tough year. But no, it's it took off. And like Daniel said, he did a lot of little things. I would compare him to Burr a little bit, like where he didn't have a great shot and he wasn't super fast, but he was smart. He knew where to be, and that's a lot of times those are the players that have worked really well with us.
Yeah, it's funny because usually, like when we play with a third line mate, he always clicks right away. And mm-hmm. he's probably the only guy that we felt that this is like
gonna work.
but slowly, yeah. Like I said, he was awesome to play with. He helped us a lot.
Well, I would imagine that when it takes longer to sort of reach the peak, you almost appreciate it more. What was it like when you broke through, and especially 05, 06, and you guys went from being good players to being top-line players? Like, what was it like playing the game, and you're like, we're doing things we never did before in the NHL?
Yeah. It was an amazing feeling. Like, it's tough to describe, but to step on the ice knowing you had a chance to create a scoring chance every shift, that's a special feeling. And I still remember like warm-ups where you're like you felt it's going to be a good night and nothing could stop you, and you got 2-1s, 3-1s, 3-2s the whole night. Just we had great teams. I mean, it helps a lot when you have all the players we had around us, because mm-hmm. it's it puts the other team on their heels, and it opens up a lot of room for us to do our thing.
You mentioned Alex Burrows. We had him on these airwaves right around the time you guys announced your retirement. And he mentioned a couple interesting things. But one thing he said is he never saw you guys mad at each other. Now, is it because you only get mad at each other in Swedish?
Yes.
Or is it just that you, like, legitimately, what's the maddest you've been at Henrik Daniel?
That's funny because, yeah, he's so wrong, because we get mad at each other a lot. Only on the bench, though. Like, yeah, never in like life outside of hockey, but on the bench we can be extremely angry with each other. But we always say it in Swedish. We don't want to show the other guys that we're mad at each other. But we put a lot of pressure on each other to be good each and every night. We expect a lot. I know how good Henrik can be when he's at his best, and I expect nothing less than that. So I think we put a lot of pressure on each other that way, and I think that's part of why we have been successful for a long period of time, because we, like I said, we expect a lot of good things from each other each night.
Well, that's interesting, because I mean, Sat, you brought up Marcus Naslund, Trevor Linden. Mm-hmm. I mean, all these guys that, I mean, the three of us played with, you guys played with over the years, and I think probably the person who doesn't maybe always get enough credit in terms of influencing each of you is the other one. Right? Like, I mean, is it fair to say that, Henrik, your biggest influence is Daniel?
No, absolutely. I mean, that's, like
you
said.
You tend to forget that.
No, because you're always put together. But I mean, he is the guy that has pushed me to become who I am. And there's no question about that. Every summer, especially summertime, maybe, we're at the gym really early every morning. And it's not easy going through those hours every day, because we haven't missed one workout in since we started, and it's not a lot of guys that I think can say that they've done everything they can, and it's like I said, during games, in practices, I expect him to make plays, and if he doesn't, I'll be on him in Swedish, but and I'll try to hide it as much as possible, but there's times when there's been a lot of aggression on the bench.
That's great. Okay, so. You mentioned the workouts. I'm going to ask you guys a few different questions now. And I think, like, everyone's had so many years to watch you on the ice to know the differences between the two of you. What about off the ice, though? Who's the harder worker?
That's got to be equal. There's a few things.
These all can't just be equal.
No, I know, I know.
These other ones, you have to.
This question, I'm going to say equal. Because, if he runs 8K, I'm going to run 8K right next to him. So, yeah. I mean, it's... And one day he's going to feel a little bit better and be better, but
That'll push you.
Sure.
But there's certain things that they like if you talk about different exercises. I mean, he is better at bench press.
Yeah, what's he bad at? What's Daniel bad
that's,
at?
That's nothing to do with hard work.
No, not hard work. But I mean, there's differences in how we're strong.
That's just me being strong.
Yeah, he is stronger.
Okay, that leads to the next part. Who's funnier, Daniel, Henrik? Which one?
Oh, I don't even know.
Who has a better sense of humor?
I think we're pretty much the same. No, I think so.
Who's more boring?
That would be me.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I like to. I can.
That was a joke because these answers are boring. But
no, but I mean, it's. You're gonna. I think one. I'm. I don't know.
But you guys pull pranks. Like you guys pulled pranks on teammates, on media. So I mean, I think you guys were sneaky funny, but nobody really knew about it.
We're sneaky funny.
Henrik's sneaky funny. I'm
just funny.
Daniel's doing stand-up later this week.
Yes. Yuck Yucks. Make sure you tune in. Sundays at 8 p.m. You know what? Do you want to do the Sundin thing or do you have something else?
Oh, go ahead.
You know what? Matt Sundin was on with the morning show today, and he mentioned a story, and he mentioned an experience with you guys that was very successful. Have a listen. Here's Matt Sundin, who was on Sportsnet 650 this morning.
I think a good story is not no dirt on him. I mean, actually, building him up even more was when we won the gold in 2006. It's the only time Team Sweden has won an Olympic gold and actually won a tournament with all the different countries, like Canada had their best players, Russia had their best. It's the only time Team Sweden never won a medal before that and hasn't done since. And Daniel and Henrik came into that tournament and we had obviously a stacked lineup and they were fitted a role where they came and they probably had the most points on our team. You're looking at the stats, but they had given a role and played on a third line. They didn't have any power play time during the tournament, and you look back at the tournament, they were probably the most important players for Team Sweden, and they just took their role and they were the best player with the ice time they were given, and that just tells you who they are as people.
That's Matt Sundin, and we have Henrik and Daniel sitting in studio here on Sportsnet 650. Like, what goes through your mind, Henrik, when you hear Matt say that?
That was very nice of him, but I don't think we saw it that way, but. I know we had a lot of points over here before going over to that tournament, but like you said, we were stacked. I mean, we had Sundin, Alfredsson, Forsberg, Zetterberg, like those Detroit guys. And I remember we only played PK, I think, the whole tournament, and that's something we were happy doing. I think it's as a hockey player, you wanna be put in a role where you can help the team. And for us during that tournament, it wasn't power play, so we did some penalty kill.
You know what, like, the thing too is playing with those peers and accomplishing everything, you guys have won essentially everything to win except the Stanley Cup. But in terms of winning all those trophies, what was the most special one? Was it the Olympic gold medal?
The Olympic is probably the main one. It's the biggest tournament you can win for your national team. World Championships back in Sweden was so much fun because it was in Sweden. It was, at the time, Sweden hadn't won a lot of World Championships, so that made it special. That celebration in Stockholm after that goal was something we'll never forget for sure. But Olympic gold is like Matt said, all the top players were there, so that was amazing.
What I found really impressive here today, and I don't know, like when you guys on your way in, were you talking about an order and how you're going to answer questions? Because very rarely have we given a specific question to a person, and you almost never interrupt each other. You know who's going to answer it every time. Is that just part of the chemistry?
So I'll answer Alex's question.
You take the idiots.
It's
question.
A good thing Anson Carter is not here asking, because then it would just be fumble fest. You'd be all over the map. No chemistry there.
We're pretty used to this kind of setup.
Is there something that all of us and the fans out there don't know about Henrik, Daniel, that you would like to share?
Oh, what is that?
Henrik, you have the advantage now of a little extra time.
Yeah,
for Daniel.
This is tough. I think I mentioned this before, and it's a nothing story. It's probably very boring, but we used to be roommates back in the day, and I always hated him for this. But setting the alarm in the morning, he would always set it for like 4 a.m. And then he would just hit the snooze button until we had to wake up. So like
he still does it.
Yeah, still does it. But I mean, I'd rather sleep until I have to go out, wake up.
Most people would. Yeah.
Yeah. He would hit the snooze button 35 times. So he would be able to.
There's no better feeling than waking up, look at the clock, and understanding that you can sleep for another 2 hours, right?
Didn't you guys have a sleep doctor at one time? Like, yeah. They didn't tell you that's not a good thing for you?
This is before the sleep doctor.
Okay, all right. Well, on the other side of the spectrum, I mean, it's pretty legendary you guys would, on the flights home, just be crushing coffee.
Yeah.
Not even decaf? Just...
Yeah, but coffee in Canada is pretty weak, though. Like, it's, not, it's like drinking water. That's I don't know.
Coffee, it's just a mental game.
Yeah.
It has no effect on sleeping.
All right.
That's one thing.
Yeah, you heard it here.
Yeah.
Oh man, Henrik and Daniel Sedin, listen, it's been a pleasure having you guys in for a full hour. Everybody appreciates you guys doing this, and like I mentioned earlier, the overwhelming response for fans was thank you, and they're just happy to hear from you guys again. I'll leave it on this: when are you going to be back in the NHL in some capacity? Will you one day, whether it's coaching, whether it's being a manager, is that going to happen one day?
Yeah, we talked about this before we retired too, that if you would have asked it 5 years ago, we would have said no way. But I think now, yeah, we have a lot of knowledge and we learn a lot of things from a lot of great teammates, coaches, and management too. And I wouldn't say no, but not right now.
They got to get fired from their soccer coach, yeah, first, right. Maybe. Right. See how that goes.
That might happen soon.
Commissioner Auld might have a thing or two to say about this, yeah, right? Exactly. Henrik and Daniel, thanks so much. You've been gracious with your time. We appreciate everything you did for the city. You continue to be citizens of this great city of ours. Thanks again for joining us, and we look forward to talking again soon.
Thank you so much.
All right, that is the conclusion of Canuck Central at Noon today with Henrik and Daniel sitting in studio for a full hour. On Point is next. Dan Riccio and Randy Janda right here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Take me out to the ball game. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks.
Hey, Jack's here.
Seriously, could you buy them, please? It's like 20 bucks of snacks right there. Sportsnet 650.
Things just got a whole lot sweeter at Granville, Starlight, and Cascades Casino. Play Cash and Candy.
Sportsnet 650.